Hello again, witches, seekers, and friends, and welcome to the Crap Feminist Witch Podcast, the show where we do a little ranting, raving, and wand-waving. I'm your host, Paige, and together we're going to explore magic and spirituality, social justice, the psychic realm, and most importantly, the First Harvest. Hey, witches, thanks for tuning in to episode 76 of the show. Today's episode, Skip to My Lou, is all about the August 1st pagan holiday of Lunasa, its ancient and mythological Irish roots, and some modern themes and ways to celebrate. For those of you who love episodes featuring the stories of gods or magical legends, I've got the tale of Mad Sweeney, who was made very popular lately thanks to Neil Gaiman's American Gods. So that's really fun. August 1st isn't just Lunasa, though. Here in Canada, it's also Emancipation Day, the day the British Commonwealth outlawed slavery, August 1st, 1833. Very similar to Juneteenth or June 19th in the U.S. But fun fact, in my part of Ontario, which is actually southwestern Ontario, it was known as Upper Canada at the time. Don't think too hard about it. There was actually the Act Against Slavery in 1793, that forbade importing slaves, and this area was the only British colony to have any sort of anti-slavery legislation until Emancipation Day 1833. Cool, right? Of course, this is also the main crossing point of the Underground Railroad, so I'm not super shocked that all of that kind of happened in the same place. Super love my part of Canada. Anyway, happy Emancipation Day to all of my Black listeners today. Even though we can't hold, physical celebrations like in Toronto, they usually have Carabana right now. We can't do that, of course, because of COVID. But just know that I'm thinking of you and eternally grateful that you are all here with us now. Hopefully, next year's celebrations will not only mark, these historic bits of progress towards racial justice, but also some new ones that make it clear that Black Lives Matter in Canada. That's what I hope for next year. So, our Sabbat. Lunasa is also known as Lammas, and is the first of three harvest festivals in the Wiccan or pagan wheel of the year. But before we talk about this weekend's specific Sabbat, I'd love to talk a little bit about the modern pagan wheel of the year and why we celebrate these particular days. There are altogether eight holy days on the wheel of the year, and four of them align with celestial events, so you have your solstices and your equinoxes. The other four are actually based on Celtic fire festivals, and they were celebrated, ancient times, at least before the 10th century, because Cormac McCarthy talked about the four great fire festivals of the Druids. So They do have very ancient roots, those four. So those days are Imbolc, which is around February 1st or 2nd, Beltane, which is usually the last day of April, often called May's Eve, or May 1st, which is May Day, Lunasa, which is August 1st, and then you have Samhain or Halloween, October 31st to about November 2nd, depending on where you celebrate, right? These four holidays back in the early days of the Wiccan calendar were known as the Greater Sabbats, while the solstices and the equinoxes were considered the Lesser Sabbats. I don't know anyone that refers to them that way now, but just in case. This eight-day wheel of the year is it's a Wiccan invention. It's a 20th century invention. Popular legend goes that Gerald Gardner and Ross Nichols, who was the creator and the leader of a modern druidic organization, like the biggest one called the Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids. They were at a naturist retreat and they developed this calendar. So Gardner argued for celebrating the solstices and the equinoxes. They mark the passage of time. It's great. The earth already does half the work for us. And Nichols really wanted this celebration of these four Celtic fire festivals, so they ended up, combining the two to make a whole big, eight-day festival cycle. Super fun. But even then, some of those solstice and equinox days didn't really have the cute Germanic names that we know them by today. So the names Litha for the summer solstice, Mabin or Mabin for the autumn equinox, and Ostara for the spring or vernal equinox were all created in 1974 by Aidan Kelly, who also created Covenant of the Goddess. He was also one of the first to, like, confidently publicly say, okay, Gerald Gardner made all this shit up around, like, 1946, but does that mean we don't believe it? And considering he is, to my knowledge, still a practicing pagan, I'd say it doesn't really matter. Unfortunately, of course, early Wiccans were a little bit sex cult-y, was a little bit of a sex cult, and this calendar served mostly a way to set up lots of really fun, sexy witch parties. No hate, obviously. Many witches, Wiccan or otherwise, choose to celebrate or mark these days as a way to connect to natural cycles of the planet, certain gods or spirits, or particular types of energy. Of course, there's nothing wrong with having your witchy sex parties. Again, no hate. But aside from the sex cult, Lunasa has all these other things in abundance, pun intended. And that's what I'm going to talk about today. For whatever reason, this has always been one of my favorite of the Sabbats, despite it being one that's kind of overlooked by a lot of witches and Wiccans. Maybe that's just because August 1st is a civic holiday where I live, so it's one where a lot of people already have off, or they have a whole three-day weekend, everyone loves that, so local pagan groups could always get together for Lunasa. But mostly I think it's just because August has a very interesting vibe. I think August vibe is very interesting. Despite being out of school for many years, August still feels like this liminal time between two significant things. You know, it's not fall, it's not back to school, but you can definitely feel the end of summer. It's still summer, but you can feel the end of it. There's life everywhere, you know, birds and bugs and kids and everything. But as we're at this first harvest festival right now, there's also this little element of death and endings. So whether you look forward to school season or not, there is this weird air of anticipation, you know, leading up to September. Also, it's a bread festival, and I am all about that. Lunasa is the Irish name for this day, although really it's the pagan name for this day. The Christian Lammas or Loaf Mass, you know, get it? It's like a pun, I love it, is also celebrated on August 1st. Isn't it funny how that always happens with those Christian holidays? And it kind of celebrates that whole, forgive me as a non-Christian, that whole bread is the body of Christ cannibalism situation. But it also marked harvest time, obviously, where bread was baked and donated and bakeries were honored and blessed by the clergy, and people generally shared in their collective bounty. Bread and grains are still a big part of Lunasa and Lammas celebrations. As great as bread is, though, love bread, there is so much more to Lunasa. Someone who is oddly absent from many celebrations of this Sabbat is the Irish god Lu, L-U-G-H, the Shining One, the beautiful solar deity of the spear, as well as multi-talented god of poetry, farming, music, athleticism, smithing. You kind of name it, he did it. His range of skills are what gained him a place in the Tua de Danann, the original race of kind of like supernatural beings in Irish mythology. These are the people who eventually became fairies or fey folk, as this mythology was not recorded by the Celtic people so much, but by the church, who had kind of inched its way in. Now, if this story sounds familiar, it's because you suffered through season 2 of American Gods long enough to recognize it as, spoiler alert, the big reveal about the true origin of the character of Mad Sweeney, played by the disturbingly attractive Pablo Schreiber. Gosh, he often plays just the worst dude, but he's disturbingly attractive. So, I haven't read the book American Gods, so forgive me. Yes, I would like to read it. No, I don't have a copy. But in the show, Matt Sweeney introduces himself as a leprechaun and does seem to have, you know, an Irish accent and a drinking problem and a whole lot of gold coins, just like we imagine a leprechaun would, even though he's like 7 feet tall. But something about that is definitely kind of off. American Gods is interesting. You know, it really shows how time, you know, the passage of time, and also dominating forces and beliefs have changed the faces and the stories of these gods and religions and their entire pantheon, right? And the differences between what we value and worship over time. So in Sweeney's story that we see, the coming of Christianity to Ireland and Scotland is what changes not only his entire, you know, his being, his name, his everything, but the face of the entire gods, the entire race of gods and magical people that he belonged to. Mad Sweeney, you know, in real life, is an Irish folktale, and it's a legend all of its own, disconnected from the god Lu. But since Lu is so forgotten in his own right, I think it was a cool choice to combine the two into one character. So in the tales, Mad Sweeney really was a king in Ireland, and he was one of the original human inhabitants of the island itself. They came from Scotland. Him and his people were pretty interesting. One thing I really liked is that they kind of worshipped birds as a mystical spirit type thing, not really like a god, but as a nature spirit. And they had a whole system of divination based on the habits, behaviors, and movements of birds. So Sweeney himself wasn't always mad as an insane, of course, but was cursed by a saint, originally for destroying his Book of Psalms, and then later for killing one of his clergy people. So in the legend, while St. Ronan Finn was marking boundaries out for a new church, because he had just moved in, the sound of his bell attracted Sweeney, and when he figured out that the church was, you know, they were in his land, they were making activity on his grounds without talking to him, he rushed out to kind of kick St. Ronan off his territory. Like in the show, Sweeney really feared that the church intended to destroy their ways, including their magical beliefs. His wife Erin tried to detain him. She tried to grab him, right, by grabbing his cloak, and it unraveled, leaving Sweeney to run out of the house completely nude. And he didn't give a shit. He went up to, he was just a priest at the time, Ronan. He grabbed his Book of Psalms, and he grabbed the saint, and he started dragging them both off, you know, completely nude, probably swearing up a storm. And then he received word that he was needed at the Battle of Magrath, or Moira. Moira is the kind of modern name for the place. So he chucked the book in the river, and no doubt told Priest Ronan there to piss off, or called him a cunt or something. You know, such amazing, colorful insults in Ireland and Scotland. I'm a big fan. So in retaliation, St. Ronan Finn cursed Sweeney to wander the world naked and mad. The madness started slow, but it did cause problems with the ensuing war. So Sweeney would, you know, he would regularly break the regular overnight truce and kill kind of indiscriminately. He was losing his grip slowly but surely. One day, Ronan and his clergymen were coming around and they were blessing the troop. And when they splashed Sweeney with the holy water, he snapped. He killed one of the clergymen with a spear and flung another one at the bishop, hitting the bell that he wore around his neck, almost hitting his heart, right? When that happened, Ronan kind of doubled down on his curse and added in Sweeney's kind of belief in birds that the church considered to be kind of demonic. So he cursed him with wings and feathers, and that he'll wander the world as a bird, totally mad and unable to settle down. He'll die by a spear, just as he had killed with it. When the battle resumed, the sounds and the blood and the clashing finally drove Sweeney completely insane. And in a fit, he whipped off his clothes and apparently sprouted feathers and talons and took off. Or at the very least, that is what Sweeney believed had happened. for more than 7 years, he wandered Ireland, insane, cold, filthy, you know, living in the dirt and in the woods, trying to find home. Along the way, he's said to have met other madmen, you know, living in the woods or on the outskirts of society. Many of them had also been cursed by the church, so that fear comes back, right? Eventually, he gained back some of his memories and tried to return home for good. But Ronan couldn't let that happen, and again, set up religious and physical barriers in Sweeney's path, because Ronan was no longer just the priest, but the bishop. The king, Sweeney, eventually made his way to the monastery of St. Mulling, one of the great prophets of ancient Ireland, right? The saint took pity on the madman, and as a prophet, he knew that the king's fate was to stay there at the monastery to live out the end of his days, which unfortunately were not far off. So he assigned a really kind woman in the kitchen to bring Sweeney a bowl of milk every day. And she took her charge fairly seriously and eventually becoming a friend and a confidant to the disgraced king. Unfortunately, her husband grew incredibly jealous and stabbed Sweeney with a spear. And before he died, St. Mulling bestowed him with the, you know, the ancient Irish Christian version of forgiveness or absolution. And Sweeney died finally free of his curse and his madness there on the steps of the monastery. What's really neat is that, you know, although Lou and Sweeney were not connected in these folktales, they are not the same person. Blending these two stories together actually makes a lot of sense. Lou is one of those Irish gods who kind of disappeared a lot after Christianity took over the British Isles. Even in modern paganism, you know, we use his name for Lunasa, but in terms of those gods, the Morrigan and Bridget survived and are fairly popular and well known. But Lou and a lot of the other members of Ireland's kind of first magical family have not stayed so relevant or so in the spotlight. And of course, that animosity toward the church really lines up in that way. The expert use of the spear, which was Lou's signature weapon, of course, and even his possible visions of becoming a bird instead of just actually being a bird, those also fit in with Lou's entire magical being. Lou's shining light, you know, he was the shining one. It wasn't just literal sunlight. He also had clarity of vision. His vision is why he's so creative and imaginative. You know, he can see the end result or the big picture. The Battle of Megrath was the end of the independence of Sweeney's people. They lost. And they would have lost whether he had gone mad and not been there or whether he had stayed. They were not going to win. And he knew that. It's why he was so afraid of the church. In American Gods, you see Lou in his former life trying to warn his wife Erin, his subjects, everyone, about the Grey Monks and the church and how they'll destroy them and their way of life. But even knowing that he is this visionary, they don't listen. That on its own is enough to just make someone snap. To put them together was a really cool choice and a cool way of bringing in more Irish mythology. And also showing how forgotten the original character of Lou has really become. So forgotten that he himself didn't remember who he was, right? And, you know, he originally appears as this kind of silly leprechaun figure, who, you know, starts fights and whatnot. And he's really forgotten his royal or his regal nature. And that just really shows you how successful the church and Christianity were in wiping out all of that stuff in the show, right? In real life, but that's what they were going for in the show. This, to all of me, you know, when you take all of these things into account, this, to me, makes Lunasa a much more rebellious Sabbat than I think we give it credit for. And I'm hoping that with American Gods being out there, and with this character especially being so, so beloved. Everybody loves Matt Sweeney, no matter how much of a shit show that show becomes. Hopefully we'll see a little bit more of Lou's character in, you know, the holiday that bears his name. Whether or not you worship gods, a topic I talk a lot about here on the show, Lou's overall kind of deity profile and the stories, this give us way more to celebrate on this day than just bread and the harvest. It's a season for creativity and vision, building, craftsmanship, athletic competitions. Lou was very athletic. You know, he was like the, you could have yourself an Irish Olympics and Lou would be, Lou would be the figure for that. And generally just curating skills that make you very special or unique, right? Because that's what got him entrance into this original family of gods, is that he had a lot to offer. It's no coincidence that in real life, Renaissance and medieval fairs begin around mid-August. This is the season of Lou, right? And most of the crafts and the competitions at those festivals that you see are the things that Lou himself would have loved. I always think that's really interesting. Of course, with COVID, we're probably not going to get to do any of that stuff this year. My apologies to all the big Renaissance and medieval communities, because you put so much work into those incredible fairs and festivals. I don't care who you are, what you're into, watching someone, you know, blow glass or eating a giant turkey leg while you watch jousting is just, it's just fun. It's just really fun stuff. So, so now that we've got that medieval look, let's look at some kind of fun modern ways that you can celebrate Lunasa. First is by decorating an altar. It's not required, of course, but I love an altar. I love a really nice altar. I love the creative process of decorating it and choosing everything that goes on it. I love that. So for your altar, use colors like, you know, a golden yellow or marigold, warm orange and browns, like, you know, those ones that just feel like food, those colors, olive greens, and then also deep reds and purples like you see in the berries that are harvested now. Think about that deep purpley blue, almost black of like blackberries. You can decorate with dried decorative stalks of corn or wheat. You can use some summer herbs like basil and thyme. You can bring in light using candles, or I like orange salt lamps, as well as, you know, images of the sun or of some sort of solar scene. You can physically put your altar in the kitchen or in the dining room. You know, it can be your centerpiece on the dining room table to kind of tie that theme of abundant food and sharing with others in with your celebrations. I also like to put craft and art items like paintbrushes, pens, and journals on my altar to decorate. Likewise, paintings that I've done myself, things that I've created myself. Corn dollies are a popular craft right now, and just the act of creating something with your hands is in itself a good devotional activity for right now. You can also use the altar after to charge up some of these items. So, you know, I would put my journals and favorite pens and everything up on the altar to charge it up with that energy of creativity and success and abundance. You can also charge tools like physical tools, power tools, whatever, hammer, nails, and athletic gear as well. Charge that all up on the altar. I'm a big crystal fan, so my altar is also littered with yellow and orange crystals like honey calcite, which we're going to talk about later, jasper, citrine, sunstone, goldstone, the gold variety, and as the green variety as well, and gold or red tiger's eye. If you make any food on Lunasa, put some on the altar, and when the day is over, bring it outside to kind of feed the animals and return it to the earth. Cooking and preparing food in general is the number one modern Lunasa activity. A lot of people like to make bread at this time. That seems like it requires some skills. Maybe learning skills to make bread is a good way to celebrate the day, but I don't have that skill. That's okay. You can also harvest food from your own garden if you have it, food, herbs. You can support local farms and farmers markets. August 1st is on a Saturday this year. If the farmers market is up this weekend, this is a great time to hit that up, to buy some food from your local farmers and farms, and possibly even some really nice treats. You know, pies, jams, everything made with these summertime berries are just as lunasa as the bread and grains. In general, it's a really good time to honor the people who create or farm or manufacture the foods and the, you know, the general tools that we need to survive every day, especially since so many of us are removed from that process. It's great to share food with others, whether you buy it or make it. If you can't make food, that's fine. Just spread the abundance around and keep it coming for the remaining harvest seasons. If you want to pull double duty and also honor Black Canadians for Emancipation Day, or Black Brits as well, consider some different foods for your table. So like rice instead of wheat and corn, and red kidney beans, which are also harvested around that time. So making up some red beans and rice, or rice and peas, is a really good meal for right now. They're filling, they're warm, they go far, they're savory, and they just totally fit in with the entire Lunasa vibe. If you don't know how to make that stuff yourself, you could find a recipe, of course, learn how to cook some really good Southern or Caribbean style food, or hit up a restaurant actually run by people of that culture. It's also, you know, in keeping with food as a theme, it's a great time to begin a course or a practice of mindful or intuitive eating. So paying more attention to what you put into your body and how it fuels you and what you feel about that. Though we tend to focus on the harvesting of plants during these festivals, you can't really forget that meat and animal products are also being harvested at this time. And in ancient times, right, most European meat animals weren't living through the winter. So even though we grow, kill, and eat animals in all seasons now, usually the focus turned to animal harvest from this point. So we do the grains and the berries now. From this point, more animal harvesting comes into the general vibe. So I decorate my Lunasa altar with animals like little pigs and chickens and deer and cows. And I focus a lot on giving thanks for the nutrients that I get from animal products. You can do this, you know, again, by supporting your local farms, or alternatively, supporting local animal rights organizations and Freedom Farms for Aged Farm Animals. If you've ever considered vegetarian or veganism, Lunasa is a really good time to either make the switch completely or even, you know, begin a devotional period where you don't eat meat or animal products to kind of, you know, honor the cycle of animal life. If you raise or hunt your own animals for meat, you may want to put something to represent those specific animals from the year on your altar. And again, just use the day to give thanks for all of those animals and their lives. I'm trying so hard to just be gentle with the way that I word all of this, because eating or not eating animals is such a contentious issue, and within spirituality you have, you know, these extra layers. So either way, no matter how you eat or what you think about animals, this is a really good time of year to focus on your reverence for animals, as well as being more mindful about the way that you eat and how sustainable it is and what it means for the people around you, you know? I know from experience that anxiety, fear, and depression can keep you from manifesting your most magical life on the best of days, and which is, these days are not the best. That's why if you're struggling or feeling lost, I want you to consider reaching out to a professional licensed therapist through BetterHelp. Within 24 hours, they'll assess your needs and match you with a therapist that is specially trained to deal with everything from depression and anxiety to grief, conflicts at home, and even sexuality and gender across the spectrum. It's all online, so there's no awkward social distancing in the waiting room. you're in the comfort and safety of home. You can message your therapist anytime and schedule weekly audio or video chat sessions. The service is available worldwide. It's more affordable than in-person therapy, and they offer financial aid to those who need it. Lately, so many people have been reaching out that BetterHelp is actually recruiting more counselors in all 50 states right now. I want you to manifest the life of your dreams, starting today. As a listener, you can get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/fatfeministwitch. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/fatfeministwitch. Wild magic grew out of a fascination for herbalism, a love of witchcraft, and a passion for creating natural, chemical-free products that honor our bodies and the earth. All items are handmade by Clarissa Camp with you and Mother Earth in mind. Made with love, purpose, and a sprinkle of magic, we craft intentional products for mindful witches who have a profound relationship with the planet. Our ritual bath salts and sprays are crafted with herbal and mineral ingredients to support your magical intentions, cleanse your sacred space, provide protective barriers, or just bring a beautiful chemical-free scent to your body or your home. So visit our website to learn more and check out our herbal-infused body butters, lip balms, and healing salves, because right now listeners of the Fat Feminist Witch podcast can get 20% off by going to thewildmagic.com/fatfeministwitch and entering promo code FATFEMWITCH20 at checkout. You can honor the legend of our beloved Mad Sweeney by taking a solo hike or a walk in a natural area. You can watch birds, study their magical meanings. Birds have tons of magical meanings. You can hunt for fallen feathers. Make sure you check if you're allowed to pick those up or not. And you can speak to old gods or nature spirits when you're out there in nature. Treat this as kind of a meditative exercise, you know, a way of getting in touch with your own forgotten magical nature. Find that clarity and solitude and hopefully come out of it with a better story than our poor king. Something fun that you can do if you like to be active and competitive, you can get active and competitive. Lu, the god, was also a god of sport and friendly competition, right? He was a very graceful winner or loser. So playing games of skill or strategy that really require that vision are a perfect way to honor the energy of the day. And honestly, just playing or enjoying a game out in the sun, like with a picnic and a big bowl of fresh berries, just sounds so lovely to me. What a wonderful way to spend your day. Music, poetry, art, and crafting are all aligned with the energy of the day, as they are, very Lu activities. But working on any sort of long-term projects or goals, bringing something you've been working for to a successful end, this other version of harvesting, or starting some new project are also very in line with the energy of the day. It's all about honoring your own vision for the future, using your creativity, intellect, and inner magical light to then make that vision a reality. So as I said, I also consider the energy of this day to be just a little bit rebellious. So it's a good time to focus on things like social change, specifically in areas like hunger and providing food for the poor, fighting for the rights of the homeless and the mentally ill. And those who've been displaced or affected by war. Personally, take your meds, go to therapy, be heard and listen to the plight of others. This can all be done in a magical way through prayers or spells done at your altar, or you can physically, get out there into your community and do that as a spiritual exercise. If you have public or community gardens, visit them on Lunasa and take the time to show gratitude for the people who are growing this food in your community. Harvest a little bit and leave a lot more so that other people can enjoy it. If you maintain any boxes yourself, you know, it's a good time to visit, to tidy up, to weed, to water, and just, you know, show a little love to your crops. Volunteer at food banks or make a big food donation to your favorite charity if you can't get out there. You can also donate art supplies or sports equipment to a school or a community center, or just, you know, have a nice big barbecue for the neighborhood. You know, meet your community. Like I said, adopting a vegan or a vegetarian diet or lifestyle is pretty rebellious depending on your circumstances and where exactly you live. But as is hunting your own food when you get right down to it. It all depends on who you are and where you live and what kind of place you grew up and what kind of people live around you, right? I would personally rather die than intentionally kill an animal with my own hands, even for food. The whole thought of it just makes me want to vomit a little bit. And I think hunting is scary, and I'm glad I don't have to do it. And I 100% believe that hunting for sport is truly barbaric and should not be allowed. But I also do eat meat. I eat animal products. So I'm also grateful for the people who are willing to do all that work that I'm not. While also thinking they're like either dead inside or sociopaths. Like it's a really weird, it's a really weird line that I walk when it comes to food and animals. Lunas is a good time to think about it, right? No matter how you celebrate or mark the day, the idea is to do it with gratitude. And I think that is even more important this year. 2020 is a real dumpster fire of a year, just in general. But it's possible you personally are actually having a pretty okay year. Might even be a good one. Kind of. This year, I became a published author, which is something I've always dreamed of. It's a dream, right? And when I'm old and I look back, I'll think, oh, 2020, oh, that virus, oh, fuck that, that was horrible. And it was also one of the best years of my entire life. Like, I'll forever think of it that way. I have a lot to be grateful for, not least of all, a fridge full of food. So, you know, take time this weekend to think of the things about this year or this life that you're grateful for and share them with others. Spread that gratitude around, share your successes with the people that you love. So that could mean, you know, sharing money or food or stories or an abundance of time or, you know, whatever. Just share that. Okay, so before we all skip off to our Lunasa weekends, I have, by popular demand, a sketchy herb and magic rock for you guys. If you were new to the show, Sketchy Herbs and Magic Rocks was a regular segment back in my kind of early days, and I would choose one of each with complementary energies to feature in an episode. Since I talk so much about both anyways, it kind of seemed tedious to continue doing it, and it kind of, you know, dropped away. But, and I think it's because so many of you have found this show because of my book, Green Witchcraft, I've had a lot of people ask why I don't do it anymore and if I could bring it back. And honestly, fuck yeah, I can do that, man. That sounds great. I forgot how much I loved the intuitive selection process when it comes to choosing an herb and a rock. You know, I don't just pick something at random. It's something that has appeared a lot lately in my life or in my practice that I get really excited about. So leading up to this episode, I tried to, you know, do some research and pick the perfect thing. And I was looking at all these lists of things associated with the day. And of course, it didn't come to me until I stopped trying and stopped trying to force it. And and stopped the overly researching and let my mind just do its thing. So our sketchy herb and magic rock today are mulberry and honey calcite. Let's begin with mulberry. Depending on where you live, your mulberry may be a white mulberry, red, or black. Either way, it's associated with the element of air, and astrologically, it's ruled by Venus and Mercury, which associates it with the Libra sign. of the zodiac. It resonates with your crown, sacral, and root chakras, and its energies just go all over from bird magic to attraction, love, prosperity, abundance, willpower, psychic dreams, vision, opening your mind, intellectual stimulation, eloquence and communication, strength, wisdom, skills in poetry and writing, gratitude, sustainability, connection, healing, comfort, balance. I mean, you name it. It hits all of our points with our episode today. So when it comes to using the mulberry, you can use the wood, the leaves, and the berries. They all have uses in magic. The white variety of mulberry is a favorite with silkworms, so that's the one you really want to use for prosperity. In North America, if you have white mulberry, it's probably an invasive species, but it is natural to Asia. So if you live in Asia, you might have some really, really profitable and prosperous white mulberries growing nearby. The black variety was more common in Mesopotamia and up through Europe, and was actually a favorite of Shakespeare's. He had a nice big black mulberry tree. And it was popular with other poets and storytellers as well. So the black variety has really come to be associated with the, you know, the more artistic uses of mulberry. The berries themselves can be eaten to open up your chakras, to induce psychic vision, to inspire wisdom and intellectual power, and to attract things, abundance especially. The wood makes great wands, and those wands can be used to increase your strength or your willpower. And they can also be made into writing tools that can help with writer's block or composing poetry. Have you ever seen those pencils or pens that are made out of a like real wood? You can do that with mulberry, right? You just have to get that center bit in there. If you can find mulberry pens or pencils, definitely scoop those up. The leaves, the dried leaves, they can be added to charm bags for strength and protection. And you can add them to dream pillows to create a psychic connection so you have more psychic dreams. It's aligned with the element of air. And like I said, it's ruled by both Venus and Mercury and features in ancient mythology with Athena. So that makes it a Libra plant, right? And that brings in that energy of balance and justice that we see with the sign of Libra. Mulberries are a really, really great tool in magic for feeding the hungry, spreading abundance, encouraging more sustainable practices, and connecting us with each other, which make it perfect for Lunasa, right? If you live in North America, especially the northeastern part of the U.S. and here in Ontario and Canada, the mulberry trees that you see are red mulberry trees. In the States, they're considered, you know, super common. Here in Canada, we actually have them listed as at risk or even endangered, depending on where you are. And the main reason for that is because people just completely forget that mulberry exists for some reason. It's common in like open fields and you know, abandoned gardens, abandoned homes and areas in general, and it's kind of considered a weed. In late July, so around now, when the fruit is ripe, oh my god, it's so good. But that deep purpley blue-black juice of the berries, like it stains the concrete and any sort of clothing that might get in its way. It stains them. But that's because people don't harvest the mulberries. it's just, bear with me. Mulberry trees make abundance sound like, you know, an understatement because they produce so many pounds of delicious food that goes almost entirely wasted. People will pull out mulberry trees to avoid the mess of the juice and the berries, and to get the birds that feast on mulberries out of their yard because it's a favorite with birds. When you think of it, I mean, it's honestly kind of grotesque considering how many people out there are going hungry and how many birds lose their habitats to humans. So this makes Mulberry a magical ally in the fight for sustainability and food equality for all. Consider harvesting some mulberries. You can wildcraft them, you know, if they're in that field or abandoned area. If they're still ripe where you are, or if you're a smart witch and you already gathered a bunch of them, use them to make pies or muffins or wine. Oh, they're so good. You can make cider, you can make juice, you can do anything. If you're honoring Mad Sweeney's bird magic and divination this weekend, mulberries will help you connect to the energy of any of those birds who have fed on the mulberries in your area. Make them easier to spot. I know I went off for a while, but seriously, please get into mulberry trees with me, because I feel like I am going mad. Like, one big mulberry tree I was admiring in a yard got yanked out of the yard. You just pulled right out, like the roots and everything, and tossed, which is nuts because it's literally endangered here. How can you destroy an endangered plant? I didn't think that was legal. And I have seen on my walks multiple rich people complaining about the mess that their trees made this year. You know, meanwhile, just a tiny little container of blackberries at the grocery store that are grown in another country from me are $4.99. They're not that different in terms of flavor or size. It's absolutely bizarre. You know, people are starving at the food bank, the Mission downtown, and yet two blocks away on private property that no one can access, there are mulberry trees with fruit that go completely to waste. I'm laughing, but it's because I'm obsessed with how fucked up this is. It's just something I'm thinking about. So if you have a mulberry tree in your yard, consider harvesting the mulberries, giving them away. If you can't eat them all, you can freeze them, you can do whatever. Another fun bonus is that bunnies love both the berries and the wood. The wood is really good for chewing and keeping their teeth in check. It's a good wood for their teeth. It's tasty to them for whatever reason, and chewing on the wood itself is really good for just their entire, you know, their entire mouth bacteria and everything. So snap a twig off, clean it up, give it to a bunny friend. They'll very much appreciate it. Our magic rock for our Lunasa weekend is honey calcite. This is a new favorite of mine. This is something I really started using at the end of last year. So this is a crystal that is aligned with Leo, whose season we are currently in, right? And the elements of fire and air. It resonates with the solar plexus and third eye chakras. So lots of gut and brain. The energies of honey calcite are creativity, courage, accomplishing long-term goals, clarity of insight, persistence, intellectual power, learning new skills, learning and feeling your own self-worth, dealing with challenges and problems, overcoming procrastination, gratitude, expressing your creativity. It gently clears out kind of stuck emotions, provides balance, attracts abundance, and it can help you focus on the big picture. You know, it's got that vision aspect to it. This particular solar crystal is not actually typically associated with Lunasa. Like I said, it's a new kind of favorite of mine. But as I was, you know, thinking about this and I had thought about the mulberries already, it really lines up with the magic of mulberries and with the stories of Lou and Mad Sweeney that we've talked about today. So if you wear it on your body, keep it, you know, in physical contact, it can help you feel energized, excited, enthusiastic, and even, you know, give you a little batch of courage. It's really great to wear on rings or bracelets since it's got good energy for like craftspeople and artists. So it's really good to wear around your hands. It's also got the vision, the clarity, and the, you know, the dedication to being a Renaissance man of skill of Lou. It's got that persistence of Mad Sweeney. And then it's got that warm sun vibe, and it's all rolled into one really, really interesting crystal. The stone also has very interesting specific vibes when it comes to money and abundance. What I've discovered in my research is that it helps people deal with, you know, like the emotional and intellectual effects of living in poverty, or, you know, with hunger, or where you're going without. Anytime someone, you know, uses the term, you know, having a scarcity mindset, it usually sounds pretty gross. But the truth is that being poor, living as a poor person, it really colors your perception of the world and of society. You know, it changes your habits, because you have to act and be and believe in a certain way. It's important. And it can be really hard to let go of some of that stuff. So, like, it can really take years, with food especially. Living with a lack of food and a constant state of hunger, really, it affects you over time. Years later, it can still affect your ability to, you know, even recognize what it feels like to be hungry or not hungry physically in your body. When you have no food, you don't stop to consider if it's food you like or if it's good for you or whatever, you eat it. You learn to cook certain dishes and with certain ingredients or without certain ingredients, right? It can make you anxious and afraid of constantly running out, which, pun intended, drives you mad. It really does affect your mental health in a substantial way. So honey calcite really helps you deal with those feelings and those thoughts and habits over time by reminding you to take stock of what you really have, to be grateful for it, and to slow down and to look at food in a new way. Like mulberry, honey calcite has this air element association. So it works with your mind and your thoughts. It can help you change your thought processes. It's like a little CBT crystal. In general, it's great for working on projects, especially big ones that you've been working on for a long time. It can help you absorb more info when you're learning new skills, or, you know, help you express your creativity. And it's even got this very courageous humanitarian energy to it that can help you go out there and really help your fellow man. Both this sketchy herb and magic rock would be great on your Lunasa altar, or worked into your meal, or carried with you as you celebrate the energy of the day. No matter how you choose to celebrate or which magical tools you use, I hope you all have a happy, safe, and abundant Lunasa and Emancipation Day weekend filled with tasty food and lots of love. 2020 has been brutal, but as of now, you know, it's winding down. We can feel that. We're approaching the precipice of a whole new year, friends. And if you find nothing else to be grateful for this weekend, be grateful for the fact that 2020 cannot last forever. To learn more about me or the Fat Feminist Witch podcast, check out my website at thefatfeministwitch.com, or find me across social media, including Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest. To support the show, you can, of course, buy my new book, The Grimoire Journal, A Place to Record Spells, Rituals, Recipes, and More. Or you can go to my website and click Buy Me a Coffee. Join my private monthly membership group at patreon.com/thefatfeministwitch. Or advise your witchy product or service through advertisecast.com/thefatfeministwitch. I hope you all have a wonderful and witchy weekend, and that you join me here again next time on the Fat Feminist Witch podcast.